Thank you for listening to this Podcast One Sportsnet production, available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Welcome to Real GM Radio. I'm Danny LaRue, your host, and so happy to have you with us. This episode is a follow-up on the Over-Under podcast that I did with Arturo Galletti of Basketball Numbers. We go through the same teams in the same order, and I think it was a lot of fun as an exercise. Of course, gives us a window to talking about every team. This is the Eastern Conference, and for those of you that are interested in a specific squad, there should be timestamps in the description area depending on how you listen to this. So, thank you so much for listening. This was a lot of fun to record. Thanks so much for coming on.
Pleasure to be back on, Danny.
So I thought it'd be fun, especially now before the year is over, to talk about the Over-Under podcast we did. For those who haven't listened to it, you still can. And we're going to go through the teams in exactly the same order. And the first team then is the Philadelphia 76ers. The Over-Under, when we did our podcast, was at 20. We both liked the over, and that doesn't look great.
Well, it's one of those weird things. It's, you know, you kind of predict that they're going to have an actual point guard. That team, it's weird. They've actually been better, and they've been competitive. This isn't one of those things like the Suns, where the Suns just basically don't compete in games. But the Sixers do. I mean, like, they do the thing where they start, like, playing faster and faster and kind of blow these games, but they're competitive. So we keep kind of thinking that maybe they'll do it. I mean, I don't think it's completely out of the realm of possibility they win 20 games, but it's looking like the under is correct at this point.
Yeah.
We're both wrong.
Yeah, and I think there's something to be gained from what they're doing since they got Ish Smith. They're looking more like a functional team. I think they're getting a better set of information on the guys that they have that they're thinking about keeping long term, but, you know, they're not getting as many wins, and that's not the worst thing in the world for them.
Well, I think the biggest problem for them is, like, Noel's and Okafor doesn't quite work together. I mean, I like some of the things that Okafor does offensively, but, you know, he's a little bit like the second year player we'll talk about later, who just isn't quite a great fit for what I think they're doing. I mean, I think Okafor's probably going to be a good player in maybe 3 or 4 years. But right now, he just, you know, he's out there. It's bad. It's really bad.
Yeah, and they're gonna struggle in those times, especially now. He should be worse defensively now than he will be in a couple of years. But being better right. Doesn't mean good. It just means better.
I mean, there's talent there. You know, they competed against the Warriors, and they've competed against some of the really good teams. It's just, you know, they can do things. It's just like, you know, it's a really young team, and they don't, you know, I don't know that necessarily all the pieces fit together. But, I mean, I think that they're going to get a couple more picks. I like the fact that they brought in D'Antoni, and they've actually gone out and gotten some guys who, I mean, it's not about getting, like, overpriced bets. Getting some guys who, like, can play and pass the ball. They play a much prettier brand of ball now.
For sure. And I think that they're getting, yeah, as I said, they're getting better information on the guys they have. We'll move on to the Nets. The Nets were, their over-under was set at 28. We disagreed on which way to go. You said under, I said over, but we agreed on not touching it because this line scared us, and it scared us for a reason, and that's that they ended up falling on the lower side of that.
Well, we didn't know what they were going to do in terms of the roster. I think that was the key. Well, one of the key issues for that team is, like, we didn't know if they were going to make any trades. And weirdly, they really didn't make any trades. And I think, like, they were always in rumors, but they never, like, pulled the trigger. I mean, you know, eventually they ended up firing the GM, and I think that kind of played a part in it. And again, I think partly is the Atlanta's actually been tougher than expected at the top this year. So that's actually played in that. And again, this is another weird team. And, like, this team actually does stay in games, right? They compete, but which is weird. I mean, I think it isn't so weird because they don't have any incentive to tank because all their picks belong to the Celtics, which is, you know, hey, as a Celtics fan, I love that. But again, I mean, do they have any player that would crack the top five in the rotation for a team going to the finals?
Probably not, but they have a lot of guys who'd be in the rotation. You know, like, who Brook Lopez would play on. He'd play on some teams. I'm not sure he'd play on any finals teams. Well, he'd be the best center on the Cavs right now. He wouldn't be a perfect fit for what they do, but he'd be the best center on the Cavs.
I think Brook Lopez and Kevin Love wouldn't work.
I mean, I completely agree with you. But
I think he's the best fit for him, and I think part of the leading question is they should have, like, OKC should have traded for him. I think if you put him next to Serge Ibaka and Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook, that kind of works because Ibaka kind of plays to his strength, but it isn't one of these things where, like, can't stay on the court. Like, Brook Lopez can cover people. I mean, he's not a great defender, but he's not a terrible one either. It's It's, and Thad is a guy. He's a heater. He's a guy coming off the bench on a good team. Maybe he's not great, but he's not terrible either.
Yeah, and they have enough talent to stay competitive, and I'm sure Celtics fans don't like that because they'll be in games for a while, and especially if they can actually get Rondae Hollis-Jefferson back, who I really liked.
I like him, but again, as I said, I mean, I think the best piece on that team is Brook Lopez, and he's not that great. Honestly, I might actually think I might actually rather have his brother.
Yeah, it's different strengths. I'm not completely sold on Robin as a defender yet. You know, I think he does fine. He's really good as a box out guy, which is hard statistically sometimes because sometimes those rebounds go to other dudes. But I like him a lot. I think that the margin is closer than some people think.
Which brings us, dovetails us into our next team, the New York Knickerbockers.
So the Knicks actually had one of the more fascinating line movements. So when it started, it was at 31.5. It dropped to 28.5, where we both really liked it as an over, and it's not definite, but it looks like they're going to go over.
Yeah, it looks like they're going to go over. I mean, they're competing. I'd probably feel better about it if Kurt Rambis wasn't coaching it, because Kurt Rambis is the only person, like, you know, I like to say that Byron Scott is the worst coach in any major sports franchise, but I think Kurt Rambis is the only challenger to that. He does this thing where he, like, buries his best player. Like, he's done the thing with Porzingis where he's burying him right now. It's a weird, weird team. I like some of the pieces on this team. I like Follow in a vacuum. He has been kind of ugly for this team in the triangle. Calderon has some strength, but the problem is, like, they're probably better off playing with the guys that got behind him.
Yeah.
Melo is better. Melo has always been a guy who could be a third banana on a championship team, but, like, you put him on his own team and it's just a mess. I mean, he'd be better off, like, not being the primary scorer, because that would make him better. He's like a super deluxe version of Rudy Gay, and I mean that in the nicest way possible, like a super millionaire's version of him. But, like, you put him alone on a team and it can have real problems, because he isn't a great defender. He kind of, the ball stops with him, and he, as I said, he'd be better off with someone else. Now, Porzingis is probably the best player on the team, but he doesn't have the wherewithal still to kind of take it over. So, again, I like the part. I think they made themselves better. It's moving in the right direction, but I just can't believe they didn't trade Melo. They really should have moved Melo this year.
Well, he has a no trade, and it's possible that he just wants to stick around. He also, the financial part of it, Dan Feldman's written well about this, that he has a trade bonus that kicks in really next year, just with the way that the max works. And so he can get more money if he waited this, you know, 6 months out to get traded. Also, with Melo, you brought up a good point with him being a better player on a good team, and we've seen that in international play. He's a very good international player. Of course, the shorter three-point line helps, but he can do that. He can be a collaborative player in that kind of circumstance. He just hasn't had that opportunity.
Yeah, if you put him on a team where, like, he's not the primary option and he can just basically kill you as a secondary option or go doing things, we've seen him kind of just sit there and kind of do things as a really deluxe piece, but he, as a primary guy, he's a problem. There's an ongoing argument on Twitter about this. It's like, I think that, do you think Melo is a positive or negative asset?
Well, I think he's positive for a lot of teams and negative for a few. The problem is that I think the Knicks are one of the teams that he's a negative asset for.
It's like, so that, and the question was, like, so doing trade value, so I'd fake trades for Melo all the time. So the question is, like, I mean, I think my take on this is basically if the Knicks get anything for Melo, they should basically make a move.
Well, the best, like, the most valuable thing they could get in some ways is cap space because they're in New York. So if they could do something like that, and, you know, they might have that option. But of course, since he can say no to any deal, what you're looking for in a Melo trade partner is a team that has a narrow window, that has kind of a short window now, because so they can get more value out of the first couple of years of that contract, and a team that isn't particularly hopeful about their cap space. So, like, I'm not saying that this is a perfect fit stylistically, but if you wanted to go kind of the window version of it, that would be a team like Memphis, where, you know, Memphis is going to be a lot better next year than they are 2 years from now, unless they've completely overhauled their roster. That's the kind of thing that makes some sense. It's just that those teams don't really have the right situation for him to waive his no trade clause.
Yeah, basically I always thought it was the Clippers.
It
was the most natural fit. The problem is, like, I think, like, you know, Woodson is on that coaching staff, right? So maybe that kind of kiboshed it a little bit. Yeah, I mean, as I said, the problem is, like, Melo as a player, again, and this is, like, for Knicks fans, I'm like, or Melo fans, I'm not knocking him. I think he's, as I said, he could be a nice third piece on a championship team. The problem is, for the Knicks don't have the talent around them. Right. And for them, he's kind of he's detrimental, because what you really want is you basically want to clear it and create like space and time for Porzingis to play and for all that team kind of drafts well, actually. So that you want to have that space to create something. And Melo, by the time the team is ready in 3 or 4 years, Melo's just going to be like, imagine what Kobe is. He's basically going to be a worse version of what Kobe is this year.
Yeah, and that I think that's the most salient point with the Knicks, is just that while Melo is a good player, he doesn't fit with not only Porzingis, but the rest of the team. I mean, this is a team that the logic with Melo is he's better now than he will be in a couple years from now. The Knicks are terrible now. And the Knicks, not terrible might be strong. They're not good now. And so it's not reasonable for them to make the jump that they would need to make for Melo to be a huge positive for them. So it's probably not going to happen, but we can move on to Charlotte.
Yeah. As a running total, it's like, so right now, like, I've got 3 of the 4 right. Danny's gotten 2 of the 4 right. But yeah, Let's keep going.
Aren't we at 3 right now? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, actually, we're going Charlotte. That's right. Foreshadowing.
Yeah, so Charlotte projected for 31.5. We both said over. You didn't love it. I did. And they're blown by it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the issue for me was the injuries. Like, I didn't like that. I remember, like, when we did the podcast, we both loved it. And then Michael Gilchrist got injured just as we were about to do it. So we were talking about it before, and we were saying, oh, we love Charlotte. And then he got hurt, and he surprisingly came back. And he was good. I mean, like, this team, the thing is, like, I love Batum. Batum is great, right? So the guys they brought in Batum, they got Marvin Williams, they have Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. It's a talented core. They can play defense. They can do things, right? It's a competent team. It's just, you know, they're blowing by it. But really, if this team was healthy, they could probably win 50 games.
If they got 75-plus games from every guy on their roster, let me
quantify that. There was one injury that helped them.
Al Jefferson.
Basically, yeah. And actually, here's the thing. They've actually figured their coach is really smart and he's figured it out. And he's using Al in the second unit. And Al is if you were starting Al on this team, it would be devastating. But like, throw him out there against these like teams as a second unit guy, as he's just devastating to people right now. And that's the best use probably of Al Jefferson. He's getting paid like a starter, but like how they're using him is exactly the right way.
Agreed. Seth Partno's written about this. Numerous other people have too. And I completely support the idea of using these defense limited back to the basket monster centers as second unit guys, because nobody there can handle them and their weaknesses aren't as relevant.
And this is what the Spurs have been doing for ages, right?
That's what Boban's probably going to end up being too.
Boban's actually not as – I would say Boban actually – I think he's going to be competent defensively. I think partly, but like, Pop rolled him out and, like, hit him. But, like, we can talk about Boban later.
We can definitely
talk about Boban later. But, again, I feel bad for this Hornets team, because, like, when they got MKG back and they were healthy, it was kind of cooking. I mean, it's a team that – as I said, they brought in guys. They brought in Jeremy Lin. They brought in Nicolas Batum. They brought in Marvin Williams. These are, like, actual NBA players, like, on, like, fairly decent contracts. It's a pity that they haven't been able to get everybody healthy, but this is a really nice team. I enjoy their games, basically.
Yeah, I hope that for basketball reasons, I hope Batum goes back there, just because I think this team at full strength, and Al Jefferson, of course, is a good point to bring up, but I like how their talent fits together. I think they're incredibly well coached. So I think, and at, you know, if they could have MKG, that also adds a big wrinkle for a potential playoff series. Like, I think you can make an argument that a full strength Charlotte team would be the biggest threat in the Eastern Conference to Cleveland.
The problem is, like, Nicolas Batum is getting a max contract.
Yeah.
Everybody's getting a max contract, but Batum is getting a max contract, and he's getting a max contract from a smart team. Like, somebody who knows what they're doing is going to give him, like the max. Like, the Bulls are going to give him the max, or somebody
Portland.
Like that. Portland. Wow. Portland did a really – we can talk about them later, but, like, yeah, that would be interesting. I think, like, if you throw him – like, imagine Nick Batum and, like, Jimmy Butler playing together.
It'd be fun. It'd be a lot of fun.
It's basically – like, it's comparable to what the Spurs do on the wing. And, I mean, again, I love it. I wish we got a full season out of it, and I really feel bad about Michael Kidd-Gilchrist.
So do I. Before we get to our next team, I wanted to talk to you about the inaugural sponsor of the Real Jam Radio podcast, and that's SeatGeek. As somebody who used to buy and sell tickets as a ticket broker, I can appreciate the challenges of the ticket buying and the ticket selling process. And SeatGeek does a great job of cleaning up some of the biggest problems. As an aggregator, they put everything together, so you don't have to worry about missing tickets that could potentially be on the market. Also, since they give a deal score, you can tell whether it's a good deal or a bad deal. You have that information, and sellers have it too. Finally, they are upfront about the price, and what that allows is that since they have the all-in prices, fees, and everything else included, is that you get a real apples-to-apples comparison. So you can say this ticket versus this ticket, because it can change depending on delivery method and various things. So to be able to look at that and look at one number and say, okay, this one is better than that one, that's what I want to do. And for Real Jam Radio listeners, special offer, you can get $20 off on your first purchase. All you have to do is download the free SeatGeek app. You go to the settings tab and you say add a promo code. The promo code is REALGM, REALGM, all caps, no spaces. And then when you make your first purchase, SeatGeek will send you $20. So you can download the app. You can look through the events they have. I'm looking at Bruce Springsteen tickets for when he comes to Oracle in a few weeks. There are lots of amazing things, sports, concerts, and all that. You find what you're looking for. You buy your tickets, and then you get $20 back. Remember, the promo code is REALGM, REALGM. Now we're on to the Orlando Magic. Another one of those kind of compelling ones started out at 32.5, went up to 34.5, and I think for both of us, that move really crystallized it, that we both really loved the under, and right now it's kind of a coin flip.
Yeah, basically, this is one of the few situations I wasn't willing to call. So my projection has it at 35.6, just about exactly where it is. So, you know, this could go either way. Their coach is a little, Scott Kyle is interesting. So this is really interesting because, like, they looked into probably the second best player in the draft class in Aaron Gordon. And people who don't know, who didn't watch the draft contest, like, this dude can actually play. He's really, 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 really talented, right? And not only that, like, but they almost lucked out of that because they almost traded him away, right? So they did some interesting moves. I kind of like what they did at the trade deadline, but it was almost despite themselves. Like, they moved Channing Frye, who's kind of a bit of a toxic asset at this point. And I like what they do. They do some weird things how they play their lineups together, but they have some talent. I mean, I think this is one of those teams. Finally, like, my complaint about them was always, like, they had all these pieces that didn't make sense for that young team. Now they're just, like, the young pieces, and it's starting to look a little more like a team. I don't think they're quite ready, but I mean, like, I think this is a team this is a team that can get into an 8 seed and, like, basically give the Cavs, who are dysfunctional as hell, a kind of a scare. I don't think they can beat them, but they can give them a scare. They can basically make them struggle and run at them for, like, 5 or 6 games.
The challenge for me with Skiles is that there are a couple different ways you can think about coaching. So effort is, of course, a part of that. You know, like, getting your guys to play hard. Running a good system is important and having guys execute that. And then also, you know, running competent rotations. And what's tough about Skiles is he does the first one in spades. This team is playing harder, and I would say to a degree they're playing smarter than they ever have. But his rotations are infuriating. So it feels like they're not at their ceiling, but they're still better than they were.
I've done extensive research for, let's call them, monetary reasons, and Victor Oladipo and Elfrid Payton should not be playing together.
Right.
Ever. They should basically be rotating. And there are ways to minimize how much time they play, but they should be playing together, basically, because when they play together, there's not enough ball. They should basically, like, be staggering them and have Aaron Gordon doing things. Because, again, as I said, Aaron Gordon is a guy who could be a top 5 guy in a few years. He's that skilled. He's that. I mean, obviously, people who saw the dunk contest. I mean, the man basically, like, almost broke the high jump record doing that. And he's that skilled and that crazy good. And this is a team that has athletes. They really do. As you said, like, Skiles will get him to play. He's not Randy Whitman, but he doesn't necessarily maximize the assets he has on the floor. Is my concern with this team. But do you agree with me that they're probably in a better position now than they were at the beginning of the year?
Yeah, I mean, Aaron Gordon really showing something is useful. The concern with them in some ways is also something that you and I think talked a little bit about with the Celtics last year. Of course, they're happy with how things turned out, but I think they're going to win a few too many games this year, and that will hurt their draft asset, because this is a team, unlike a few others, where, yeah, they have a lot of pieces that I really like, but they still have some major needs. A defensive center would make a world of difference for them. Even a steward point guard, like, if they could get a Patty Mills, who, I mean, I like, but, you know, if they could get somebody like him to play 25 minutes a game, it would make a ton of difference for them. So
here's some interesting questions for, like, so they have a couple questions for them. I think moving Fry and getting, like, I like Ersan. I like putting Ersan on this team. Do you stay with Bucevic?
Well, until you get an alternative, but I think you have to look into getting somebody else, because he's a good player. Like, he's definitely a talented basketball player, but if your goal is to, let's say, like, win a couple of playoff series, I think it's very hard to build a good enough team around him to do that.
Do you move Peyton?
If anybody wants him.
Yeah, I mean, I think the issue is, like, they got a couple guys who are, like, you got to keep Oladipo. You got to keep Gordon, right?
Right.
And you basically build around that, but the pieces that, I mean, I think the pieces they have value, but, like, they have to find the right buyer. I mean, again, I like the talent that they have in-house now. I'm not quite sure. I mean, I do think they still have a couple moves to make. I mean, again, I think this team, by osmosis, I think this team probably wins like 45 games next year. If they do nothing, because they're just going to get older and better, I think they win 45 games next year. But I don't know that they have, I agree with you, like, they're missing a piece at this point, right, before to like that next level. I think they can get into like playoff contention, but I don't think they can get into like championship contention, like win a series and like go into the second round. I don't know that they have the parts there yet.
Yeah, I think they're going to need more. They're going to have a lot of cap space, but we'll move on to the team they made arguably their most significant trade deadline trade with, and that's the Detroit Pistons, who were projected at 36. We both like the over. I think we both also like the division odds, and they're going to blow by the over, but not win the division.
Yeah, I mean, we liked it. The division odds were long. We just said,
yeah, that, they were. Like, it was a value play.
It's like we're saying, look, is there a punter who can come out of nowhere and like, yeah, I mean, I think we were probably right in that. I mean, it's just like that needed the Cavs to kind of self-destruct a little bit on their injury, and that didn't happen. We didn't trust the Bulls at all, and we'll cover the Bulls in a bit. But I mean, again, I like this team. I like the, obviously they have a really good player in Drummond. Fit with Jackson has been interesting. I mean, Stan is still tinkering with that roster, right? So he's still looking for the right parts. Again, I don't think he quite has all the shooting that he wants on this team, right? But again, I you know, if I'm a Pistons fan, I'm kind of, I mean, this team is moving in the right direction, right? They just, they're going to get older, they're going to get better. They need some shooting. Right. Yeah. And at this point, I think, again, they're going to make the playoffs. Who would they get in the first round? Actually, that's interesting.
It depends. I mean, I think they won't get better than the seventh spot if they make it in. So then that means Cleveland or Toronto.
So you're thinking they're getting, I mean, I think that's a series with them. If they get Toronto in the first round, that could be really interesting, actually.
That would be, interesting. And Detroit, it's kind of crazy to say, considering he was probably always going to be like a 20 to 25 minute a game guy, but they really miss Jody Meeks. Just having a guy out there who can hit open shots reliably would be really important for them, and they'll get those players in time. That's not the hardest thing in the world to find, and they'll get a backup point guard, which is a big issue for them right now because they traded Brandon Jennings in the Tobias Harris deal. But yeah, I really like them, and when you talk about teams that could win, you know, 45-plus games by osmosis, you know, this is a team that, when I watch them, I think, depending on how things turn out, I expect them to win a playoff series next season.
Do you think Toby Harris is the right guy to put next to Drummond?
He's not perfect, but at his price, you take that risk now, because him at $16 million, $16 million is probably going to be average starter salary for the next couple of years, and they got him for nothing, and they weren't going to get somebody as good as him. So no, he's not perfect, but yeah, I mean, he was as good bet as they were going to have.
Yeah, I think the problem is like they need somebody. They need, and everybody needs to stretch for, but they need like somebody who can like go in there and like hit a jumper and create some space for Drummond. Right, that's the biggest problem right now, and because Drummond has some limitations offensively that like are alleviated by space, and they don't have that. I mean, again, I think the other problem for this team is like, you know, they obviously, you know, they, Reggie Jackson is good, but he's not great, right?
Yeah.
So I think the core is there. It's just, again, it's one of these teams that like, I think they're going to be around, and I think I kind of trust Stan Van to get them to next level. It's just, it's not quite there yet.
Yeah, I think that's definitely fair. The Pacers were projected for 40.5 wins. We both really wanted to stay away. You said over, I said under, but we both wanted to stay away, and you were more right than I was because it looks like they're going to go over.
Yeah, right now the it was 40.5, and it's projected 42. So it looks like over. This team, again, it's well coached. What we didn't trust what the hell they were going to do. Paul George looks good. They really, again, another team that like, like there were some, like they would, if people talked about the last year's draft, this year's draft basically just destroyed last year's draft. I mean, Miles Turner is a great, great player. Like there's a couple guys. He's a really, if you haven't seen him, he's really good to the point that he's starting. And this is not a team that starts rookies easily. So I mean, I like the pieces. Hill has been out for a while. I think this team is slightly better than their record right now. They're getting better. They do have a bit of a log jam. They have all these big men, and they're effective, but Miles is probably the best one. I mean, again, this is one of those teams that, you know, they're a move away. I do trust the front office there, and they'll find guys. So, I mean, I think this team probably will be back in the upper echelons of the Eastern Conference soon.
Their best players are on the positive side of the age curve, so they'll get better. You know, Turner and George should be better, and the rest of their talent, you're right, you know, they have a few little log jams. They'll get better. They'll get more well suited to what they're doing with their own draft pick. You know, they'll have some cap space as long as they don't spend it on Monte Ellis again, which they can't because they already have him under contract. They'll be fine, and that's good.
They're fantastically well coached. I mean, yeah. I think that, and again, the teams run well. They have a knack for finding talent and getting the most out of them in the draft. And again, I think people kind of forget that, you know, Paul George is coming off like a devastating injury. I don't think you're getting, and you can tell it some nights. I mean, he's not 100% yet, right? So, I mean, I think this is a team that actually could be better at the end of the season. This is like the Hawks team a couple years ago. They're going to be better at the end of the season than they are right now, or they were at the beginning, right?
Yeah.
So this is a team that, like, this is a team. If I got to pick a team in the bottom of the East to pull an upset, this is the team that I'm picking, right? Even if it's the Cavs, I'm like, I don't think the Cavs want the Pacers in the first round, right? It's a bet. Like, the Pacers are a bad get in a first round playoff series in the East, right? Because again. But
I'll tell you something that, well, I think will make you really happy. Not as much about that, though I agree with it, is that when I covered their game in Oracle against the Warriors, in warm-ups, Miles Turner was draining threes. So that doesn't, of course, doing that, as we know with free throw guys, doing that in practice, doing it in warm-ups and doing it in a game isn't the same thing. But if he can do that next year, this team gets a whole lot scarier.
No, I think having Miles Turner and Paul George as your core is really, really, really good. I mean, this kid is like, and he blocks like a maniac. It's great. I mean, and they have effective size. And again, it's just a matter of, I think this team could get hot in the second half. I think this team is going to be like, if they wind up in like the sixth or seventh slot, right? Or like, let's say that it's the seventh slot against Toronto, or even like, I mean, I wouldn't say if it was 8-1, but I don't think they're going to wind up in the eighth seed. I mean, I think they have better odds than Charlotte, because Charlotte's a little banged up. But I think this is a kind of, they're going to be really good next year. Like, I think we're going to be, like, when we do this next year, we're going to be picking the over on them, too. I mean, it depends on who it winds up. But, like, if it's, like, 42, 43, I'm thinking it's way over.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of well-coached teams, your Boston Celtics, it was at 43.5. We both really liked it, and we did that for a good reason.
Yeah, I mean, like, I described this today. Like, this was an epiphany I had. Basically, the Celtics are what would happen if the Spurs bench was playing in the East, right?
And still still coached by a really good coach.
Yeah, and still coached by, like, Pop or something. Like, Brad Stevens is a great coach. There's all these guys on this team who are talented and good. None of them are great. Like, you don't have a star or superstar, but it's a really deep, long team. Like, this team goes, like, they're, you know, people complain. They used to complain about Evan Turner, but, like, Evan Turner in a good system and being well-coached is an effective NBA player, right? He's been an effective NBA player before, on some good, like, people forget, like, he played on that Sixers team that's quite good with Iguodala. That was a good Sixers team. And then he played on some bad Sixers teams, but you can't judge him, and he's been okay here. Same thing, Jay Crowder is a really good player. He's not a great player, but he's a really good one. Avery Bradley's become, like, a good player. Solinger is a decent player. Isaiah Thomas is a decent player. Like, again, they don't have a star, but they go, like, 8-10. Amir Johnson's a decent player. They go 8-10 deep. And so this is why they beat people on nights, because, like, you know, it's kind of hard in the regular season to beat a team that can go 10 deep and, like, basically play all 48 minutes with quality NBA players. A lot of teams can't do that. What happens is when you get to the playoffs, and this is the problem the Celtics are going to run into, is you in the playoffs, a team can just go six guys. And if a team goes six guys, then that 10 deep advantage goes away, right? So again, I like the Celtics team. I think they're well positioned to add some guys, but, like, they need to, I mean, they kind of need to add, they kind of need one guy, right? So they've got all the pieces and all the, kind of all the framework, but they need to add, like, one guy. And hopefully the Nets will contribute to getting that one guy to Boston.
Yeah, I think I said before the season, I don't remember if it was with you or somebody else, that my best bet with Boston was actually, though I loved their over, was actually if you could do this, that they would go, that they would lose in the first round for exactly what you said. Like, I just thought they were that team that would do well and lose the first round. And that is in no way a criticism of their team. I like a lot of what they've done. It's just that, as you said, when you compress the rotation, it helps them less than it helps everybody else. They're still quite good. And they're, as you said, they're well positioned to add to this. They're well coached. And we'll see where it goes, but you have to appreciate what they have now, because it's rare for a team without, you know, that guy. Yes, Isaiah Thomas made the All-Star team, and he's a very good player, but he's not that guy to do as well as they've done.
Let me ask you a hypothetical. So let's say it was a 4-5 series. Boston is the 4, Miami is the 5. Who wins that series?
Does Miami have Bosch?
No.
I'd say the Celtics, but I wouldn't feel happy about it.
I think even with Bosch, Miami kind of... Because I think it's well-coached, the veteran players, and I think it would be a fun series. I think what's actually, what we're going to get probably is we're going to get like the Celtics and the Hornets or something like that is what we're going to get. Celtics
Then I'd bet the Hornets. I love the Hornets though.
I think the Celtics are going to lose nobly in the second round, right? I think that's what's going to happen with them this year. And I think hopefully if the Nets contribute and like the lottery odds contribute, we can get like a nice piece to add to this roster. It'd be nice if, like, the problem is, like, I worry that Danny's gonna get, like, a top 3 pick and he's gonna do what he always does, is he's gonna pick a small. and he's gonna have all the guards. You'd be like, but dude, you, I was so pissed on draft night as a Celtics fan when he picked this, like, he basically, in a draft where, like, Miles Turner and Karl Anthony Towns and Jokic and all these, like, quality big men were available. Actually, Jokic was the previous draft, but all these quality big men were available and Danny picked 3 guards.
Yeah, and Rondae Hollis Jefferson would have been, I mean, amazing. Pop Portis, who I know you really liked. But I wanted to ask you before we move on, a theoretical Raptors-Celtics second round series would be interesting, because the Celtics have one of their strengths is taking away offensively dominant guards. And I think that would be a series that could give Toronto some problems.
I think that would be the dream matchup for the Celtics in the second round. Because basically then what you're doing is I think the Celtics can beat the Raptors, right? I think they're better coached than the Raptors, and I think they have the pieces to give them trouble. And then you're kind of hoping that the Cavs get an injury so you can get to the finals and get destroyed by whoever's there. But hey, you get to the finals. I mean, again, I think that would, like, the easiest pass for the Celtics basically is if they get, like, I would say if they get, like, probably if they get an injured or a kind of banged up Hawks team or a banged up Hornets team, and then like the Raptors, that's the best possible scenario for them.
Yeah,
like the four seed in the East is bad for them, because Cleveland's not a great matchup for them.
Cleveland's a pretty terrible matchup. They did beat them the last time they played, but that's not gonna happen most of the time.
We can talk about Cleveland. Like, Cleveland has a problem, so I mean, like, but like, I think Cleveland's beatable.
So
I don't want them if I'm the Celtics. I don't want them until the conference finals. I think I'd much rather have the Raptors, because I think that that's a much closer matchup between those two teams. And I think that I think the talent differential between those two teams isn't that high. Like, they don't have a guy to kill the Celtics from the post, not really. So it becomes a guard thing. And I would, having seen it, Avery Bradley is probably the best on-ball defender I've ever seen live, right? He's really, really good. And again, you know, when he's healthy, particularly, like, and again, they got him, they got Evan Turner, they got Jay Crowder. They can defend on the wing, and that's kind of important in the playoffs. You can get away with more on that. And the Celtics are not above kind of throwing elbows and kind of hitting people.
Yeah. Speaking of teams that can defend on the wings, though this team does worse everywhere else, the Milwaukee Bucks were, the over-under was set at 44.5. We both liked the under. I liked it more than you did, and that instinct was right, because they're going to go under.
Yeah, you know, but you remember what we said, basically? I think we said specifically that it was like they got rid of their center, and their center is a really good defensive center, unless the Mavericks can tell you.
Yeah.
And so they got rid of their center. They went to Michael Carter Williams, and it wasn't there. Caveat, like, I like Kidd as a coach. Kidd has actually figured out what to do with talent, because now he's going point Giannis, and point Giannis is actually kind of effective, right? So they shuffled some things around, and they're playing a little better. I mean, like, it's a clear under, but they're kind of improving. I do think that they need to, and I think they know this, they need to get, like, a competent rim-protecting big man. I think if they could get a do-over, they would not do what they did, which is, like, sign Monroe and get rid of Zaza.
They could use Jared Dudley, too. I mean, he wouldn't be starting, of course, but he would be a nice little depth piece for them as well.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think they got a lot of – I mean, again, this is a team that actually I think gotten better. I think they're well coached. It's just you can't lose a guy – like a competent rim-protecting big man is something that you don't want to lose. And they lost not one, but – I mean, Larry Sanders went crazy. And then they lost Zaga. And you can't replace two of those guys and still stay competitive. I mean, like, they're not bad, right? I think Giannis has a chance of being like – Giannis continues to improve. It's just they're obviously going to take a step back when you lost. When you lose talent in the middle, you're going to take a step back in the NBA.
For sure. And I think, as you said, I think that they know what their flaws are now. And that doesn't make it definite that they're going to improve them. It just makes it more likely because they're pretty identifiable. But I think that's really all that we need to say on the Bucks. The Wizards were at 45.5. We both thought over, but we heartily agreed on stay away, and the Wizards have been one of the league's most frustrating and inconsistent teams.
Well, I pay a lot of attention to the rotations and everything else. This team has been, it's up there between the Suns and the Wizards as who the most like injured and like catastrophic team has been. Like the Wizards, there's been like at least four games this season where they've like basically dressed like seven players. Right. And so it's kind of hard to judge because like Porter's been out and Beal's been out and Gortat was out of the country at one point and like Humphries was out and Allen Anderson was out and like, I even forget the name of their small forward that was like out from, like they've lost
Allen Anderson. Players.
No, the other, not him, the their other small forward.
Dudley?
No, the one with the back issues. Martell Webster?
Oh, yeah. He's been out. Yeah, so, he's been a while.
Yeah, so this team is basically not been able to dress a full squad for the season. Now, again, they're starting to look – this is one of these teams that's rounding into health. I actually kind of think that they're going to – this might be the team that, like, knocks off, like, the Pistons. They're the biggest threat to me to kind of sneak in. They're out. They're in. They're close. And this team is much better than the record right now.
Agreed.
Right, because like now that like Beal's healthy and Wall's playing out of his mind and Gortat's playing and Dudley's established kind of in that rotation and the added Markieff who kind of sneakily fits on that roster, it's a much more this is a team that's deep. Now again, the problem with the Wizards, right, if they were being coached by a competent coach, they'd win 45 to 50 games every year. Randy Whitman is not that guy, right? He's gotten better, but like he's still Randy Whitman. Right.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was thinking back to the game. I've been kind of high on them, it seems like forever, but they were, so after the All-Star break, they played Miami without Wade and Bosch and still lost by 20. And so you kind of have those moments where...
Do you agree with me that if John Wall doesn't get hurt, this team makes the finals last year?
Yeah, probably. I mean, not probably. They definitely have a good shot at it.
Well, this is assuming, again, keep in mind, this is after Kyrie Irving went down, right?
The first time, yeah. The injury, he only played, what, three games in the conference finals, and he was limited in, I think, one or two of those.
Kyrie goes down, and, like, if Wall doesn't get hurt, that team, I mean, they were playing really, really well. It's a talented team. Like, Whitman was not coaching badly, and it was working. Pierce was, you know, kind of feeling it a little bit, and I think that I picked them, before the Wall injury, I picked them to make the finals. And so this is, again, there's no argument that this is a talented team, right? And I think they're, again, I think probably, I think the Pacers and the Wizards, right, are the two, like, teams at the bottom of the East that are probably the worst possible matchup you can get, like, in the 7th or 8th seed.
Yeah, they both have really high ceilings.
But I'd rather get the Wizards because they're badly coached, right? So it's... Although, again, Whitman has been better in the playoffs, but he's still Randy Whitman. He's still going to... Like, and I remember what happened in the conference final. He's still going to lose a play. Like, they're going to lose two or three playoff games that they shouldn't lose because they're the Washington Wizards and they're coached by Randy Whitman. We know this. We've seen enough Wizards games to know this, right? It was actually like, and I think, did you and I talk about this? That basically because they won those two playoff series, that was probably the worst possible outcome for the Wizards because it saved his job.
Yeah, we did talk about that.
And again, this is, like, here's the thing. I think Whitman's a nice enough coach when you're developing a team. But at the point where they're at, right, like, we've seen – here's the thing. You've got Bradley Beal on the squad, right? You've seen what happened when a transcendent three-point shooter just keeps taking shots and shots and shots. It creates space. And then if you've got a slash-and-kick guy like Wall to pair with that, then it just becomes completely devastating. And then you've got some competent bigs, and you got guys who can make shots. I don't know why Bradley Beal isn't taking like 10 3-point shots a game. And if you watch a Wizards game, like and I've watched many a Wizards game, you'll be sitting there looking at like the shot selection going like, what the hell are they being called? Because if they actually used their weapons properly, this would be a much better team.
Yep. Right? No arguments. Toronto, set at 46.5. You really liked the over. I was and thinking under, and you were right.
Yeah, the thing with this team, and again, I think the talent is there. I mean, DeMar is having – the surprise for me is DeMar is having a career year. I thought what was going to happen is they were going to boost DeMar's value and they were going to trade him. What's actually happened is they got into DeMar. DeMar is having the best year of his career. He's actually a net – like if you look at the numbers, he's a net plus player for the first and only time in his career, right? This doesn't mean he's a bad player. He's just like for his career, he's a slightly below average NBA starter, right? He's just having his career year that happens with guys who are 26 years old, which I believe he is this year, and pair that with Lowry playing really well and kind of the rest of the squad, and this squad works. Now, the GMs beware, do not give DeMar DeRozan a max contract based on his career year because you will regret it. But, I mean, again, I thought the move for them was going to be that they were going to trade him, and they didn't need to. I do think that they're not going to keep him this offseason, right? And I expected what they're getting from him, they were going to get from DeMar, and DeMar's been out, right? So it's been kind of a mixed bag. What do you think?
I'm pretty much in the same boat as you. I understand why they didn't move DeMar. I agree with you that he's not worth a max contract. And DeMarre Carroll, it will be a nice player for them. I think that's going to really add a dimension to them for the playoffs.
Because everybody's going to have money, and DeMar is having this great season, what's going to happen is they're going to trade his bird rights, right? They're going to trade him.
You mean DeMar DeRozan?
Yeah, DeMar DeRozan.
That's really hard to do because they would have to sign it. They would have to sign, since he's an unrestricted free agent, if they don't want to pay him his money, he'll just sign as an unrestricted free agent somewhere else.
Yeah, but they can offer him a max, like a veteran's max deal and trade that for assets, and they have the space to do it.
Under the current CBA, they can't. If they sign and trade him, he can only get the same deal as everyone else. It's because they freaked out after LeBron and Bosch did that and just changed the rules in the new CBA so that you can't do that. So that it actually might really hurt them.
So you think they're going to let, I think then probably they're just going to let him walk and sign, like, again, they can sign, like, if somebody's available, they can sign him, basically. And I think that I think they have a smart GM. I think the problem for them is always going to be they're going to have a hard time drawing a superstar. Superstar either is it's the money, the buddies, the beach, or Miami.
Yeah, it's hard. They're in a challenging spot with that, but they're a good team, and I worry that they'll feel a lot of pressure, especially because Lowry's going to be a free agent next summer to kind of keep this together. But Masai's smart enough that he's not going to be bullied into that.
I think the trick for them is they kind of have, if they're going to make the finals, this is the year for them to make it.
Agreed.
Like sneakily, but they have to make the finals. And for them to make the finals, they have to get the one seed. Right. I think that's the whole key. If you're a Raptors fan, this is the year you have to get that one seed, and you have to, this is the year to try. The problem is like, it's a bit of a minefield because they haven't won a playoff series, right? And it's really hard to win that first playoff series. But they're going to get either the Pacers, the Pistons, the Wizards, or the Bulls in the first round. And so it's going to be like, if they're going to have to win those playoff series, right?
Yeah, they're in a tough spot. I think they can make their way out of it. I don't expect them to, but they can. Miami's next, 47.5. We both kind of like the under and staying away, and I think that was a good call.
Yeah, right now I've got it set at the under. The team is probably worse than the record right now. Even adding Joe Johnson is not a magical solve that will solve all their problems. Now, again, the problem with I think we covered this, which is Miami's old, right? And the problem with old teams is older teams will have problems in the regular season. Now, as you get into the playoffs, older teams will do better. One, there's more rest. Two, there's no drug testing. Three, it's different rotations. So I think the playoffs are, Miami is a team that's going to be better in the playoffs, right? Right now, and again, they're doing a couple interesting things. I kind of have this feeling they're burying Hassan Whiteside a little bit, the way they're running the rotations, and they kind of have been doing that all season. He's clearly When he's on the court, he's really, really good. It's just they kind of limited his minutes for whatever reason, which is kind of silly because he's going to get paid. Whatever they do, he's going to get paid the max this summer. There's just too much money going around. The other weird thing for this team is, and let's see if you agree with this, is like Goran and Wade on the court at the same time is not optimal.
I agree with that. I think that they should be staggering them as much as they can. They don't really have a ton of other options, so you should be, you know, it's not like you should be curtailing their minutes other than enough to keep them healthy.
It was kind of telling that, like, Wade was out for a few games, and Goran, Deng, and Whiteside all went crazy.
Yeah.
And they won a bunch of games. Because what? Because that pick and roll with those two guys kind of works. And Deng as the off guy works. This is, it's just the way, it's, and I don't think, the way they use Wade doesn't kind of work with the rest of the talent they put on this team. Right? It's a little strange.
They have
Do you think
three.
He stays?
Wade, I think that what's kind of sad in a way is that I think it would in a way it'd be better for all sides if he left, just from a basketball perspective. But the personal element of it makes me think he'll stay.
Yeah, same thing here. I mean, I think he'd be better off going to another team, and it probably enhances odds of winning the title. But I think he's going to stay. And again, as I said, the talent doesn't quite work. It's kind of better. This is a team of misfit toys. The rotation works if people are missing, right? And it's the same thing. It's like Bosch and Whiteside didn't quite work together. And so you're seeing Whiteside explode. And it isn't because Bosch is a bad player. Bosch was having a great season. It's just you couldn't have him on the court at the same time. It's too many guys don't kind of work in the court at the same time. It's weird. That said, what do you expect out of this team in the playoffs?
I think it depends on matchup almost entirely because there are certain things that they do well, but also a guy like Wade, his weaknesses are so hardwired into him that a coach that knows how to exploit his shot selection can work wonders. However, they might not face that team or that coach in the first round. But, like, I don't know. At the same time, there isn't a team out there that, like, let's say they finish in the bottom half.
Right.
There isn't a team out there in the top half that I sit there and imagine, oh, Miami's licking their chops. Like, there are teams that I think they do all right against, but like maybe their Boston has some weaknesses, but I think Boston could cut off some of Miami's strengths as well.
Yeah. Do you think this team makes, like, what is the absolute ceiling on this team?
I think they could win a series and so we assume their opponents are full strength or reasonably close to it. I think they could win a series and be competitive in the second series.
Yeah. Do you think they can make the finals?
The NBA finals?
Yes.
Nah, I don't think it's realistic. I mean, there are scenarios that I could concoct where it happens, but I wouldn't call those likely.
Fair. I mean, like, I hear this talk about, oh, Miami finals. I'm like, I agree with that. I'm not loving that idea.
If they had Bosch, I would be much more amenable to it, but we can't assume that right now.
Agree.
Chicago, 49.5. You like the under. I like the over. Yeah, and you liked it. I said stay away, and they're going to go under. Butler being a big part of it, but also they're just not as good as 49 wins.
Well, I mean, that was the thing for me. This is an aging roster. It has some obvious red flags. I mean, their best player for a while had been Noah. Noah basically, you know, the wheels fall off. I mean, it's interesting that Rose has actually been playing better recently, finally. Some of my buddies like to call him General Soreness. But, I mean, like, the problem is, like I said, like, how much, I mean, like, they're pushing the hell out of Powell right now. They're playing, like, 35, 36, 37 minutes a night, and I don't think that's sustainable. They're in a weird spot. I mean, because I think they kind of need to blow it up, and they kind of need to, they basically, the team is Jimmy Butler right now. It's Jimmy Butler. I like some of the young guys they have, but they kind of need to move on from everybody else on that team. I mean, I would almost kind of think that you kind of need to have a whole. You keep him, you keep Portis, you maybe keep a couple other guys, but I think everybody else, I don't know why they didn't pull the trigger on some trades and start moving folks before the deadline. I mean, what is your upside with this current roster next year? You're not winning a title. You're not making a conference final with this roster next year. You know, it's just you get this with teams. They had a shot. They had a window. They missed it, and now they have a bunch of aging parts that are overpaid. I mean, and that's kind of where they are right now. I mean, do you disagree with my assessment?
I got concerned when there started to be murmurs that they were thinking about re-signing Pau Gasol. You know, I can kind of understand not trading him if the market just wasn't there, which from what we can tell from expiring big men not getting moved, it probably wasn't. But you can't bring him back unless he takes a huge pay cut because he doesn't fit with everything else that you're doing, both from a player perspective and from an age perspective. And they're in a challenging position because so many of their guys are free agents, and letting free agents walk is a lot less fruitful than trading them, you know, like, so you can get something for them. But at the same point, if those are, if that's the hand you're dealt, your goal, as it is for any team, is don't make bad contracts. And so that is what I'm scared about with them, is the idea of making a bad contract or two or three. But
the problem is, like, how much do you think a contract for Pau Gasol is going to be worth?
I wouldn't be surprised if he got $10 million a year, let's say 2 or 3 years.
I think with the salary inflation, it's going to be like $230. And I don't know that it's necessarily that terrible, because you got to remember the 15 is the new 10, right? So the math is kind of skewed. So I think anything below like $17 million is probably not horrible. When they're like, you got to remember, it's going to be like $100 million cap, right? So it's a bit silly. So I mean,
he's not a good fit for them, even if he takes a discount. Like, let's say he got two years combined $25 million. I don't think I would do that if I were Chicago, just because that ties you up too much with everything else.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, like, I think I wouldn't be that upset about a Powell contract. Basically, that's my take on it, right? And I could be crazy about that, but I think that's how I feel, you know?
I think he would be a better fit with other teams, but I don't love him on the Bulls. So let's move on to the Hawks. The Hawks are a team that I think we both liked. Over-under was set at 50.5. Of course, they were a 60-win team last year. And I would say when we got to the All-Star break, that seemed like a possibility. And they've been disappointing since it. And now I think it looks like they're going to go under.
Yeah, right now we got a projected at 45. They've had some injuries, but not that significant. I mean, like, we both thought Jairo Splitter was going to be a contributor for this team.
Right.
And I think part of the issue, okay, so here's the issue for this team right now. I think Dennis Schroeder is better than Jeff Teague, right?
Could be.
And basically, they came back on the Warriors when Dennis Schroeder was on the court, right? And this is, you know, it's something to consider at this point. It's like, I thought, and they almost moved them. They were basically positioning themselves to move Teague. They didn't end up pulling the trigger on that for whatever reason. And now they've got a bit of a mismatch. Now, again, this is a good team, but they're in a weird of a risk. They missed the guys that they let go, right? So they missed Damari. They missed a couple of the other guys that had to go. They don't have that. We thought they were going to have Thiago as a stopper. They don't. So, again, I think it is what it is with this team. I think, you know, I think they're probably going to turn around a little bit. I think they're going to end up, you know, it's 45. I wouldn't be surprised if it's like 46, 47 that they end up winning. But, yeah, they're not quite as good as they were last year.
It was concerning last night when I covered the game when they lost to the Warriors. It just didn't seem – they didn't have that pop like they did last year, where you just – you see it and you go, you know, even if they lose, they played well or they played hard. That was a game they should have won, and they didn't bring it in that way. And some of it was bad luck, too. Millsap missed some shots he usually makes. But those kind of games become important, because you don't usually get to face the Warriors without Stephen Curry and Andre Iguodala. And they're also – so, okay, if you're Al Horford, you're going to get a lot of money, you know, no matter what. You're getting your maximum for whatever number of years you want. Would you want to go back to the Hawks? Do you think they're going to be his best suitor?
I would say no. I don't think he's going to. Here's the thing. Yeah, I don't think he's going to wind up on the Hawks, because he's probably another one of those guys that, like, smart, like, Batum's one. I think Horford's a guy that you could add to a team. So let me think. So the let's say the Bulls decide to blow it up. How about adding Al Horford to Jimmy Butler?
That's the team I was thinking of as well.
Yeah, the Bulls. How about Portland?
If he wanted to go there, that would be another one. And what I'm concerned about with him, but I think could be a benefit, it kind of seems like he has his head on his shoulders, is that he is not a good fit for any of the big market teams that might have money. You know, like, if the Lakers throw money at him, it wouldn't be necessarily a mistake, just because he's a really good basketball player. But he, you know, New York would of course be a bad fit, just because he should be playing in the five long term. So I hope that he is considering teams like that. Chicago makes some sense. Even Orlando would be really interesting.
You know who's going to build I'm actually thinking about it. You know who's going to build a super team this offseason?
You're going to say Boston, aren't you?
No, I'm going to say Miami.
Miami's one that's interesting. I mean, Miami, if you play him with Bosch and Dragic, that would be awesome.
Well, I'm assuming, let's assume, like, what if Bosch can't come back? What if he just needs to retire? If he needs to retire because of medical reasons, then basically he's gone. Wade's gone. They don't have to re-sign Wade. They don't have to re-sign Whiteside. And all of a sudden they have nothing on the cap.
Well, but then you probably shouldn't bring Horford in because you're not going to be competitive for a year or two.
But they can sign a bunch of guys, right? And Miami always like gets the pick of the free agents, right?
Yeah, because I think if that were, let's say, parts of that were to happen, I actually think that hurts the case for Horford. But if, let's say, if Bosch can make it back, I actually think that helps, because then you have if you could get Dragic, Winslow, Bosch, and Horford as your core,
then maybe Batum.
That's too much money. They wouldn't be able to really work that financially.
Are you sure?
I'm not sure. Well, we don't know exactly where the cap's going to be, yeah, but I think they would have to sacrifice a little bit.
If we were doing like I think Miami's going to be has a shot to be a really interesting player this offseason.
Right. I think they have a shot at Durant too. Not a great one, but a shot. I will never write them off for an elite free agent ever again.
No, I think basically the default should be they're going to go home, they're going to go for the title, they're going to go with buddies, or Miami's in play. It used to be LA, but now it's Miami, right? Because it's South Beach, it's Miami,
yeah.
Right? So I could totally see KD and Russell deciding they're going to go to Miami in a few years. I don't think that's what's happening, but it's Miami's always in play for free agents.
Agreed. Cleveland over under was set at 57.5. We both like the under. I think right now they're on pace for the over, but I still think the under is more likely just because of where they are in the conference.
Well, it's 57.5. We had them projected. I have them projected right now based on everything in the schedule at 55, two wins under that.
Okay, so you're thinking in the under as well.
Yeah, basically, I think their coaching situation got worse. I think that adding Channing Frye was just not a good idea. Basically, like adding Frye, some of their best rotations kind of went away with what they did. I don't like what this team has done recently. The whole thing with Kyrie doesn't work. They haven't quite figured out how to use all their parts properly. I mean, I think the East is theirs to lose, but I don't think that they're in any way, shape, or form invincible. I mean, I think this is a team that can very much stumble in the playoffs, right? Because LeBron's not LeBron's kind of past his prime and noticeably past his prime. He's still great. He's just not the LeBron of 4 years ago. Right.
If teams in the playoffs treat him as if his jump shot is broke and it doesn't come back, they're going to have some major problems. Because
as I said, they want no part of Indiana in the first round. Because you know Bogle is going to basically treat him like he can't make a shot, and they have
rim protectors too. So they're a team that if you just hang back and force everybody else and George Hill on Kyrie, that would if I were to pick an Eastern Conference first round series that I'd want to see, that's the series I want.
Yeah, because, and again, I think the issue, it's like basically Cleveland's title odds, right? And I think we said this in the podcast at the beginning of the season. I've said that consistently. Their title odds are all about Kyrie, right? They're not about LeBron. They're about Kyrie. Kyrie numerically and statistically has been a better version of Ray Allen, right? So the problem is they don't quite know this. They play him on the, he should be playing off the ball and they do way too much ISO. They should be running cuts and having him move off the ball and do things and make shots because he's a great shooter. Like they should be going more towards make him look like Curry, make him look like, don't make him look like a classic point guard. And it's weird. They also, again, as I said, it's a really weird team because they don't know how to use Kevin. They still don't know how to use Kevin Love, right? And adding Channing Frye, as I said, it's kind of a weird move because you're basically making it even harder to use Kevin Love effectively. Right. So Kevin Love used to be fairly effective when he was being used with Matty Vildova, but that rotation is kind of going away now and they're going more to Vildova and Frye. And as I said, I don't trust Tyronn Lue, right, in a playoff series, right? And I typically when I do the simulations for playoff series, I take into account coaching edge and Tyronn Lue was not getting the coaching edge under again. Well, maybe against it'll be even against Whitman. He's not getting an edge against anybody. I haven't seen anything to lead me to think that he is. I'm not saying he's a bad coach. I'm not saying he's basically a rookie coach in midseason. He's going to get thrown to the wolves, basically.
What I'll say about Frye is that he's not going to move the needle a lot. I actually like him more as a regular season guy, just because he's pick and pop ability from the five is something that a lot of teams can't really adjust to, which is nice. But in the playoffs, it's not as big of a deal because he can be exploited defensively. So he's probably not going to play a whole heck of a lot. So I don't think it's a big move in terms of that. And the money isn't a factor really for Cleveland at all.
They should have tried to get somebody who could make them use Kevin Love more effectively.
I don't think they need.
get a second tier rim protector so you can run him in a second unit and have him run like at this like off the elbows, right?
But isn't that what Mozgov is supposed to be? I mean, that's he's disappointing this year, and they're not using him in the right way. But
yeah, but they you're right. I mean, they weren't doing that, so they went out and got a guy who can hit jump who supposedly can hit like mid range jump shots. But okay, so if the end goal, like, you're not beating the Spurs or Warriors in a series if you're relying on Channing Frye to hit jump shots.
Agreed. Yeah, he's not that type of guy, but I think with part of what they got in that deal was getting out of Varejao's contract, because they actually saved money in that deal, which is a good thing for them. It's not the biggest deal because it's just Dan Gilbert's money, but that is what made that deal kind of work for them. And I agree with you. Yeah, a second tier rim protector would have been great for them. I don't think those guys were really on the market.
What do you put Cleveland's odds of making the finals at right now?
I'd say they have about a 75% chance.
Since they got rid of their coach, I'm down to like 55, 60. I think that there's a real shot that they get into trouble in, like, they're going to struggle because they're going to be out coached in every series, right? Unless they get Washington, they're going to be a coach in every series.
But they have so much more talent than every other team. Even if it's not used correctly, they still have so many better guys.
Yeah, but the other problem is, like, there's a bunch of teams in the East that, like, have been hurt and are going to be better at the end of the season, right? So I think Washington's that's the case with Washington. That's the case with Indiana. I think Toronto, if they get Demary back, they're going to be healthy. It's going to be better than they are right now. So, I mean, like, they're going to – it's a tough road for them, right? I don't think it's easy. And they're going to get into situations where I don't know they're going to be able to make the adjustments. And the adjustments for Cleveland, or like adjustments for LeBron teams, have always been like, oh no, LeBron's more talented than everybody else. And I don't think that's necessarily the case anymore. I don't know that he has that fifth gear anymore. He hasn't had it in the regular season this year.
I'm not sure either way, but I don't even think they need that. I think Kyrie and Love as being your two of your three best, even if LeBron is not even near that, is still more than enough.
I mean, like, that's my thing. It's Kyrie. I mean, Kyrie's the most important player on that team for me. Like, that he's the guy who can get them. They can get into the finals. I don't think what do you think their chances are to win the title?
Under 25.
I don't even think it's that high. I think it's like 5 or 10%. Because I'm assuming, like, let's assume Steph Curry gets hurt. Okay, so it's the Spurs.
Yeah, I've made that point too. I think that's a good point. But at the same time, you know what we saw last year. So while you can make an argument that the team that they faced last year is worse than whoever they'd face this year, remember that Cleveland team functionally was out without Kyrie and Kevin Love, and while they're not using those guys perfectly, they're still a whole heck of a lot better than guys that they have that they had instead.
I'm not sure that LeBron exists anymore. I think that's one point, is I'm not sure that LeBron exists anymore. The second point is, people forget, like, when the first time you make the finals, you don't get any calls. This is kind of historically true. And so the Warriors basically weren't getting any calls in that series. It's typically an edge that I work into that. And I think it's different when you're the challenger as to when you're the champ. Like, if you're playing in that series now, like, the Warriors are basically going to get, like, they're going to get calls like the champ. And I think that it's just rougher. I mean, even at full strength, I don't think Cleveland is – I mean, Cleveland is not as good as they were last year, right? And I think partly that's because LeBron's older, and I think partly that's because they're not as well coached, right? So, and I think that, as I said, I don't think they could beat – this is a question. How far down do I have to go in the West to find a team that they could beat in a seven-game series?
Clippers. They could beat the Clippers in a seven-game series. I'm not saying they would, but I would have the Cavs.
Clippers at full health with Blake back.
Yeah. Remember that we haven't seen the Clippers even win two playoff series in the same year.
Wow, yeah, but that's kind of unfair considering, like, if you look at the teams they beat or that beat them versus the teams that, like, the Cavs are playing. I mean, it's
didn't they lose when they lost Oklahoma City? Wasn't Oklahoma City missing one of, was it Ibaka? They were missing one of their guys.
I mean, it's like the team that the Clippers have lost to. It's one of those, if the Clippers had been in the East, the Clippers would have made like three finals in the last, like.
Yeah, that's also true, but they also have some pretty serious flaws that I think Cleveland could exploit, especially backup point guard being one of them. Their bench depth is terrible. Yeah.
It's like adding Jeff Green as your salvage.
I would love to see that series. Like, that's another argument for a top 16. Like, that as a second round series would be so much fun.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think, again, here's the thing. Hypothetical series, Memphis against Cleveland.
Well, so, and, I mean, Cleveland beats them by a mile.
Are you sure?
Absolutely. Completely sure. Memphis doesn't have Marc Gasol, remember.
But Memphis is actually playing, even without Gasol, they're playing well. I mean,
they're playing outright.
I think it would be like a 6-game series. Memphis is one of those teams that like just kind of, again, it's another team that's like deep and they got players and they're well coached. I mean, I think it would be, I don't think you're giving them enough credit actually.
That might be true.
I think Cleveland wins. I'm not going with that, but I think it's a more interesting series than you give credit for. Yeah,
I respectfully disagree, but anyway, we should probably move on.
That is the East.
That is the East. Thanks again to Arturo Galletti for taking the time to come on. You can read him at basketballnumbers.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Arturo Galletti, ArturoGalletti. As you could guess, this is the first part of a two-part series. The podcast was long enough that we couldn't really do it as a single thing. I don't put up podcasts longer than an hour and a half or so. And this was 2.5 when we originally recorded it. It'll be shorter with editing and all that. But it was wonderful to talk to him. The second half will include the Western Conference and a little bit more on the finals, just because so many of the more likely champions are on the other side of the bracket. So that's a really fun conversation. I don't know exactly when I'm going to put it out. It'll probably be maybe Saturday, but probably Sunday, just to give him a little bit more space. And hopefully you enjoyed it. You can use the code, the Real GM code on SeatGeek. Download the free app and you can use the promo code to get $20 off on your first purchase. It's a great show of support for the podcast and get you some money. So, hey, that's great. Also, you can subscribe, download, give us a rating on iTunes. Really do appreciate it. It is something that helps with advertisers. It's something that also just makes me feel good and, doesn't take a whole heck of a lot of time. And as I say on this, and I wish Nate said a little bit more, we don't know exactly what goes into the iTunes ratings, but we know that subscriptions and ratings are definitely a part of that. So the more people do that, the more we go up there, and that allows other people to find our shows more easily, because searching and all the other ways you can do it, that's just another tool that can go in the box. If you have any feedback, positive, negative, or in between, you can reach out to me at Danny LaRue on Twitter, DannyLeroux. You can email me, DannyLaRueMBA@gmail.com. I read everything. I respond to as much as I can. Responding to it a little bit more slowly right now. I have a lot going on with sporting news and Real GM and Warriors World and everything else, which is a great thing. I'm not complaining at all. It's just busy. So thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.